Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Nashville, 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. The president once spoke to us in glowing rhetoric, the finest political speaker since Cicero. Now he's been reduced to saying, please, come on guys, please. We'll ask what he's begging for, plus Colin Malloy of the Decembrists tells us why Portland is cooler than wherever it is you live, and Carl Castle reacts when we tell him this city has more strip clubs per capita than any other city in America.
Yeah! Yeah!
We'll ask what's really got somebody so excited coming up on our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nancy Lyons. There are some hopeful signs today for two jailed American hikers. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports from Istanbul. A lawyer for the pair is reporting progress in the effort to free them on bail from Iranian custody.
Masoud Shafai, representing Josh Bauer and Shane Fatal, told reporters in Tehran that he has one judicial signature and needs one more to finalize bail arrangements set at $500,000 each. Following a court appearance today, he told the Associated Press that he will have to wait at least a couple days to get the second signature. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad announced the imminent release of Bauer and Fatal last week, only to be rebuked by the head of the judiciary. Peter Kenyon, NPR News.
Forces loyal to ousted leader Muammar Gaddafi continue to put up a fierce resistance in the Libyan cities of Sirte and Bani Walid. Sean Carberry reports anti-Gaddafi fighters are struggling to advance on the two cities today.
Gaddafi loyalists launched a counterattack this morning against revolutionary fighters trying to advance on Bani Walid. The situation there has been a virtual stalemate for several days. Gaddafi troops have staked out strategic positions in the hills and buildings of the town and continue to fend off advances by the new government forces. Revolutionary fighters are having slightly more success in Sirte, where they've been able to inch forward, but they're suffering heavy losses in the intense fighting. Despite public statements of optimism by interim government officials, the intensity of the pro-Gaddafi resistance is raising concern that the fighting can drag on for some time. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Tripoli.
Federal investigators are on the scene of Friday's deadly air show crash in Reno, Nevada. Their focus appears to be on parts of the plane that have been recovered from a crater left by the crash. Mark Rosekind is with the National Transportation Safety Board.
What we can do is say that we have aircraft pieces. This accident really did. It took an instant. It's going to take months for us to figure out what happened. And what's critical is not just what happened, but why.
Rosekind was interviewed on NBC's Today Show. The pilot and eight people on the ground were killed. Officials with West Virginia's Air National Guard say they were fortunate the crowd was well away from the site where a plane went down during an air show there yesterday. The pilot in that crash was killed, but no one else was hurt. Larry Green was watching when the two planes were making an aerial move.
Two of them come in for a pass over in the middle, and when the one peeled out, the other one just kind of went down and went down the kind of a grassy area in between the runway.
Green was interviewed by WDTV Television. Federal officials are trying to determine the cause of that accident. President Obama will focus this week on debt reduction. He'll be releasing a plan tomorrow that includes setting a minimum tax rate for Americans earning more than $1 million a year. Republicans say they'll fight raising taxes. This is NPR News. Representatives from North Korea and South Korea are expected to meet in Beijing this week to discuss restarting the nuclear disarmament talks. North Korea walked away from the six-nation negotiations more than 2 years ago. The talks are aimed at persuading North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons program in exchange for food aid. Former IMF head Dominique Strauss-Kahn will speak to the French tonight on national television. Eleanor Beardsley reports the interview on the nightly news will be the first time Strauss-Kahn speaks publicly about his arrest in New York on sexual assault charges last May.
Strauss-Kahn is expected to explain to the French people what happened in New York. Until now, no one has ever heard his side of events. On May 14th, Strauss-Kahn, who was then director of the International Monetary Fund, was arrested for assaulting a New York hotel housekeeper. The charges were later dropped because of doubts about the housekeeper's truthfulness, though forensic tests showed a sexual encounter did take place. A poll out today shows the French are still divided over Strauss-Kahn. 53% say they hope he will announce his complete withdrawal from politics, but 63% of the French still hope he will offer advice on steering the country through the economic crisis. Strauss-Kahn still faces a criminal probe in France from a young writer who says he tried to rape her in 2003. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Beardsley in Paris.
The Emmy Awards will be handed out tonight in Los Angeles, and one burning question is, will Mad Men continue to dominate? AMC's 1960s Madison Avenue saga has earned three straight Emmys as Best Drama Series, but it's up against Boardwalk Empire, HBO's Tale of Prohibition in the 1920s. I'm Nancy Lyons, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland, Oregon, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Goodness. Yeah, okay. You have been enjoying those microbrews, haven't you? That's great. Well, we're excited too. We got a great show for you today. We got Colin Molloy, lead singer and songwriter of the great Portland band, The Decemberists, coming by later to play our game. We're excited to see him. And it is great to be back in Portland, which is one of those places that is so cool, so hip, you find yourself dying to fit in and to be accepted as one of their own. Why, I even heard that Carl Castle right here went out and got himself a tongue piercing.
You should see my belly button, Peter.
Well, he heals up. Give us a call. The number is 1-888. Wait, wait. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there. This is Deborah Levy from Palos Verdes, California.
Oh, Palos Verdes, very beautiful.
Yes, it is.
What do you do there?
I work at a school as essentially a computer teacher, which means I try to stay a step ahead of the kids with technology, which is no easy feat.
That's impossible, because the kids just learn it from birth now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you'll always be bigger than them. It's great to have you with us. Let me introduce you to our great panel this week. First, say hello to a writer, a performer, and a veteran of the Colbert Report. Mr. Peter Gross is right here.
Hi, Deborah.
And next, one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, Jeff.
And finally, the author most recently of Alpha Better Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hello, Deb.
Well, welcome to the show, Deborah. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you will win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Excellent. Ready.
All right. Here is your first quote.
If you love me, you've got to help me pass this bill.
That was somebody getting a little desperate this week.
Ooh.
Who wants people to show their love for him by writing to Congress?
I would say that'd be Barack Obama.
It would be President Obama. Very well done. Yes. President Obama followed the release of his American Jobs Bill with what's being called the National Presidential Begging Tour. The refrain of which is, pass this bill, pass this bill. That's not like him.
His advisors must have convinced him the only way to get his message across to the American people is to repeat it over and over again in monosyllables. Pass this bill. And he was like, you mean I am the president of a dumb country? Yes, sir. You can tell he's bored, though. You can watch him. If you're an Obama watcher, you can tell he's bored. First he was like, pass this bill, pass this bill. Please pass this bill. And then he started doing it in Latin. You know, abduco is lex. Then he was like Yoda, this bill, pass you must. Then in an anagram, spitball hiss. And by this point, he lost this again.
He didn't literally say, if you love me, did he?
That he was, did. What happened he was... Did? What happened was...
He was talking to Sasha and Malia.
You can't even get... He says, let me just convince them to write to Congress. Yeah, yeah. Please, we can't get those two.
Just one of
you. No, this is what happened. He was doing one of his... he's been doing these public presentations, these speeches, these rallies, and somebody shouted, I love you, Barack. And he did what he always does, is he yells back, I love you too. And then he said, but if you love me... Good. Help me pass this bill.
Yeah.
That's kind of manipulative, though.
Nope. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of sort of the guy and the girl parked up on the hill.
Yeah.
Late at night. If you really loved me.
I know.
Or maybe the Republicans. Maybe the Republicans, you know, they just want to wait until they're married. I don't know what that means in the political world. But
meanwhile, your next quote is actually a reenactment from Tuesday evening. I will be Wolf Blitzer. Should society just let him die?
Yeah! Yeah!
So Carl was representing somebody in the audience responding to one of the many questions asked at what event this week?
The debate?
Yes, it was a GOP debate. That's right. So one thing you might have noticed if you've been watching the GOP presidential debate so far is that the audience, really more than any of the candidates, is really excited about death, either by execution or untreated illness. This week, the crowd applauded and someone shouted, yeah, when Wolf Blitzer asked Ron Paul if society should let a hypothetical man without health insurance just die. Although, to be fair, it was really it was just one guy who shouted that, and he turned out to be somebody who was rear-ended by a hypothetical man on the way to the debate. He was angry. At the last debate, the crowd cheered for the amount of people Rick Perry had executed as governor of Texas.
Right.
Romney, you know Romney, he's seeing what voters wanted. He went right to the pander. He announced his running mate, it'll be Romney Grim Reaper 2012. Hey, it worked for George Bush. Mm-hmm.
That is unfair to the Grim Reaper. How dare you? That man has a family.
Mm-hmm. And a heart.
Yeah, and a heart. Yeah, he's got his own heart.
The crowds at the GOP debates have been attracting more attention than any of the candidates. Maybe they should get the nomination. Mm. You know, everybody please rise for President Angry Mob.
Yeah, I think, in fact, that the president should be chosen by lottery.
Really?
Yeah, because then you wouldn't get attract the kind of people who want to be president.
That's true. Just pick somebody at random.
You'd be sitting at home watching television, and the Supreme Court would show up at your door, and you think, "Oh God, I'm..."
Let me put some pants on.
The other big topic of this week's debate was: did the Merck pharmaceutical company bribe Governor Perry to mandate the use of their vaccines in Texas? Perry angrily responded to this accusation from Michelle Bachmann that they only donated $5,000, and he said, quote, if you're saying that I could be bought for $5,000, I'm offended, unquote. I mean, $5,000 is insulting for a politician of his stature and seniority.
Six, eight, ten.
Yeah, no, his campaign slogan is Rick Perry, if you have to ask, you can't afford him. Very good. Here is your last quote.
I'm so sick and tired of living on normal Earth. This place sucks.
That was a blogger over at nycbarstool.com reacting to news this week from NASA that they've discovered what?
Oh, I did see something about this. It was two something.
Two somethings. They discovered far out in the cosmos two somethings. No, you didn't hear the story?
No, I didn't.
I'll give it to you then. It's not Earth. It's Super Earth.
Oh,
super.
Heard about this? Scientists at NASA announced the discovery of 50 new planets this week, among them what they're calling Super Earth. Huh. It's indistinguishable from our regular Earth until it removes its glasses. The planet, its real name is HD85512b, and it exists in the habitable Goldilocks zone, which is also the area where planets are all covered in porridge. Now, here's the best thing, because people are excited, because it's only 36 light years away, which is not far, in relatively speaking. And we maybe could get there. And the best thing about it is that it orbits the sun every 60 days. So if we did get there, we'd all get to live to be 500 years old, which is cool. But when you think about it, it's a really warm place, and the average age is 300. It's just Florida.
Can we go there if we wear ours out?
Yeah, well, that's the hope, because frankly, at this point, we might as well just trash this one and get another.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should burn this planet down for the insurance money. And
we may be doing that slowly.
Yeah, we are, actually. I don't know. There was like, it must have been a short circuit.
Yeah, I don't know.
Carl, how did Deborah do in our quiz?
Deborah, you did fine. You had two correct answers, so you win our prize.
Oh, awesome.
Well done, Deborah.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We want to remind everybody they can join us most weeks back home at the Chase Bank Auditorium in beautiful downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, you can go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Peter, rumor has it that Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin wants to run for president of Russia again next year. He's already begun a sort of covert campaign to woo the public over. He's using a series of photo ops featuring the Russian leader in action doing, among other things, what?
Anything while topless?
We'll take that. The answer is everything. This week, Atlantic.com put together a gallery of over 30 photos of the Russian leader displaying his manliness. For example, a picture of Putin driving a Formula One race car, Putin harpooning a whale, shooting a tiger, delivering a karate chop to a challenger, competing in an arm wrestling competition, giving a piano recital, snuggling with a puppy, piloting a firefighting plane, bottle feeding a young moose, driving a tank, playing hockey, talking to a lion, whispering to a horse, consoling a tiger cub, bending a frying pan with his bare hands, and deep sea diving off the coast of Greece just to discover two ancient clay urns.
That was the best one.
That really, no,
He looked like he just emerged from the water. Like, I didn't also see any, like, scuba equipment. Can he breathe underwater also?
He's Neptune.
He can breathe. He can breathe whatever the hell he wants, sir.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Dos Equis guy may be the most interesting man in the world, but when Vladimir Putin drinks beer, he does it with that guy's mom.
Ah.
Coming up, our panelists show you how the sausage is made in our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for home ownership at houselogic.com. Esurance, offering tools to help customers track car repairs online or with a smartphone. Esurance car insurance at esurance.com. And Lumber Liquidators, providing hardwood flooring for the home handyman and professionals. Catalogs are available at 1-800-HARDWOOD. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Jane Clayson. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Did San Francisco's subway system violate free speech rights when it shut down its cell phone service to rein in protesters? Also, Jeff Tweedy on the latest CD from Wilco. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Weekdays at noon.
Hearing voices.
We would walk out of the house, and then you'd hear this, and it literally stop you in your tracks.
Predator. I would kind of just crawl out into the shadows, you know, and I could hear them out there talking, and I'd be sneaking up to the bushes, and I'd go, roar.
Predator, from Hearing Voices.
Saturday afternoons at 2 and Sunday nights at 8 o'clock.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 75 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Peter Gross, Roy Blunt Jr., and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland, Oregon, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
This is Ted Pease from Logan, Utah.
Hey, how are things in Logan?
Well, you know, I just heard that applause, and I don't get that when I get in my classroom.
All right. Hey, let's make Ted, could we all applaud for Ted? Ted, it's Ted Pease. There you go. So I'm assuming you teach something depressing and sad?
Yeah, journalism.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, Ted, welcome to the show. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Ted's topic?
Oh, that's how they make that.
We rarely stop to wonder what it is we're shoving into our mouths or slathering on our skin, where it comes from, who made it, and how. If we knew those answers, well, we'd still eat it. We're Americans. Anyway, this week our panelists are going to read you three origin stories of things we commonly use. Guess the true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Okay, here we go, Ted. Let's hear first from Roxanne Roberts.
Makeup artist Jeremy Ridgewell is the unexpected darling of New York Fashion Week thanks to his innovative looks, especially his glow-in-the-dark eyeshadows on the runways of Jason Wu, Marc Jacobs, and Calvin Klein. His secret? Radioactive waste mixed with ground mother of pearl and organic dyes. Quote, I got the idea when I worked as a medical technician by day, drag queen at night, he tells Women's Wear Daily. I needed something that really popped on stage. His makeup caught on with downtown hipsters, quote, they were really into the irony of it, and got noticed by fashion editors earlier this year. Ridgewell won't say exactly where he gets the waste, but stresses there's only trace amounts of radiation in the makeup, less than a chest x-ray, and most models, he says, have no problems with this product, except for the acid green eyeshadow. Quote, that kind of freaks them out, but I tell them that fashion is all about taking risks.
A glowing form of makeup made from radioactive waste. Your next unusual background story comes from Peter Gross.
Next time you're really high and wondering how they get the cream filling into a Hostess cupcake or how much wood a woodchuck could actually chuck, don't contemplate where that weed you just smoked comes from. You might not want to know the answer. Residents of the Chew Valley, a remote region between Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, have a rather unorthodox method for harvesting their hash. First, a highly trained, pun intended, individual gets completely naked and rides on horseback through a dense field of pot plants. After a few hours, when both the rider and horse are covered with a thick layer of resin and sweat, the sticky brown substance is scraped off their bodies, pressed into bricks, and sold to eager customers. Dark Side of the Moon CD not included. So the good news is, if you've ever smoked this stuff and thought, man, this tastes like the sweat of a stocky Central Asian man and his horse, you were right. The potent product known as Plastilin is extremely popular with locals and is reported to be the only type of marijuana that definitely does not give you the munchies.
Mm-hmm. Pot resin scraped from the naked skin of Central Asian horsemen.
Well summed up.
Yeah. And your last behind-the-scenes revelation comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
Honeybees, alas, are a threatened species. So maybe it's a good thing they no longer have a monopoly on making honey. This week, the Food and Drug Administration announced approval of a new form of honey induced from rabbits. Put Peter Cottontail in a cubicle with room only for him and a conveyor belt carrying a mixture of carrots and nasturtiums, And the rabbit will chew and chew and continue to chew long after he is sated and ceases to swallow. The resultant overflow is conveyed to special vats where it steeps along with organic enzymes and natural sweeteners until, voila, bunny honey. Too much of an ick factor for you? How do you think bees make honey?
All right. Here, then, are your stories. Somebody out there is using either, from Roxanne, glittery makeup made from radioactive medical waste. From Peter Gross, they're smoking pot that's made from a resin scraped from the naked bodies of horsemen. From Roy Blunt Jr., bunny honey, made in a process so gross I don't want to go over it again. Which of these is the real story of a strange but true origin?
You know, I love them all.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't like bunny honey or sweaty horsemen? But I have to go with the glow-in-the-dark toxic waste.
You're going to go?
Why not?
You've got that look, Roxanne, that you sometimes get. All right, your choice then is Roxanne's story of the glow-in-the-dark makeup made from medical waste. The audience, at least a part of them, seems to agree with you. All right, we actually spoke to someone who can tell us about this remarkable product.
Workers would run through the hemp fields naked and gather it and scrape it off later.
That was Dr. Michael Aldrich, author of the High Times Encyclopedia of Recreational Drugs, talking about the Central Asian horsemen who would run through the fields or ride through them till their bodies were covered with pollen and dust, which was then scraped up and made into a potent resin.
Makes you want to eat some bunny honey.
It really does. Well, as so many have been before you, you've been seduced and misled by Roxanne Roberts, but you did earn her a point. Thank you so much for playing. And Roxanne, I'm sure you're grateful as well.
Thank you.
And now the game where we take cool people and make them finally do something unpopular. It's called Not My Job. This is a true story. During the 2008 presidential campaign, then-candidate Barack Obama came to Portland, Oregon and drew almost 100,000 people to a rally. And one conservative commentator suggested that the crowds there really came out for the free concert that preceded Mr. Obama's speech by a rather popular local band called the Decemberists. And speaking as a fan of the band, the guy might have had a point. Colin Malloy is the lead singer and songwriter of the Decemberists. Colin, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Great to have you.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, I know this is a terrible thing to ask a musician, particularly one with a big body of work, but for those people who have not been lucky enough to hear you, is there any way to describe your music simply?
Oh, God. You know, I say we play rock music. There's just, you know, I think it's just kind of the easiest blanket term.
Right. But that encompasses a lot of things.
I know.
Well, it's really hard. I mean, I myself trying to describe your music, which I love, is like, well, it's like, it's so good, and there are trumpets sometimes. That's all I got. You know?
Yeah, it's hard.
If you ask me. You're known for really complicated and fun orchestrations. You have a lot of instruments and a lot of complex musical things going on. And you're also known for really interesting and complex and literate lyrics. Here's an example of a Decemberist lyric. It's from your latest album. And the Andalusian tribes setting the lay of Nebraska alight, till all that remains is the arms of the angel, petty greed, queen of supply side bonhomie, bone drab, you know what I mean. And
that's actually
all right.
Hetty Green, queen of supply side.
Oh, I'm sorry. So this is petty. Instead of petty greed, this is somebody misheard it. Hetty. Oh, I'm sorry.
Hetty
it's a
Green.
Reference to Hetty Green, of course. Hetty Green, the late 19th century miser of New York City. Oh my God, she's a mainstay of pop music.
Wanted to correct.
All right, thank you. So Hetty Green would be the queen of supply. It's interesting. We're talking about rock and roll music. This could be a graduate seminar in English literature right now.
Wouldn't Shecky Green have worked as well?
And by comparison, here's a lyric from the massively popular Justin Bieber. I'm just sort of exploring here. It's a baby, 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 oh. I'm just saying. I'm a fan, but I'm not, you know, this is not a criticism. Just maybe you could go a little more.
I could go for that.
Really?
I mean, I think there's a lot to unpack there. Some
oh, yeah.
Some deep stuff.
By the time you get to the third baby, it's really taken on a whole new meaning. Don't you think?
As the doctor said when he delivered triplets.
People have said that you have this big enthusiasm for Victorian literature and sort of themes of that period.
We do Edwardian, too.
Edwardian. Oh, excuse me.
A little.
God. Yeah. I'm so embarrassed.
Victorian, Edwardian. Napoleonic era.
Really, you do all that stuff.
They're as different as Andalusian Nebraska. How dare you?
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Yeah.
If you hadn't become a musician, what would you think you would be?
Well, musician was my A plan. My plan B was to be a writer. So that was out of college. I pretty quickly realized it were kind of two bad plans to have. Balancing, you know, if the A plan didn't work out, well, I'll just be a writer.
Yeah.
You know?
Famous writer.
Yeah.
Actually, speaking of writers, you in fact have published, if I'm not mistaken, your first novel. It's a young adult book called Wildwood.
Mm-hmm.
This is exciting. It's really fun. I've read it. It takes place in a magical kingdom filled with adventure and mystery and danger, except unlike, it's not Narnia, it's right outside Portland.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Impassable Wilderness.
Yeah, we basically, people here will know, there's a 5,000-acre park here in Portland called Forest Park.
Right.
And it is really such a remove to walk into the woods. I mean, you really do feel like you've left Portland, you've left the country, you've left the world.
And if we were to go there, would we find, for example, coyotes in uniforms with rifles?
You may.
Okay. Did you? I mean, one thing I noticed, and I was reading the book and really enjoying it, is that it, for a kid's book, it has a pretty high body count.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe you were like reading Harry Potter. You're going, this is good, but you know what it needs? It needs artillery.
Well, as a writer for that age group, I guess all you can do is base it on your own experience and the stuff that you liked when you were that age. And you know, when I was in second grade, I actually wrote a play called The Bloody Knight.
Did you?
And I think the body count was really high.
Really?
Yeah, I think. I don't think anybody survives in the end.
You actually, I love this. We went over to your own Tumblr site, and you had posted an Amazon user's review of Wildwood, your book, and I'll quote it. I give this book a very strong no for a vast swath of readers, unless you are a communal hippie chomping on granola, worshipping the Earth Mother, and planning on inciting violence to destroy the society you rejected long ago, unquote.
Yeah.
Fair?
I think it's pretty fair.
Yeah?
I was sort of astounded to see that. I thought it was as good a review as it could possibly get.
Yeah.
You know, now that I hear my words written back like that, I apologize.
Yeah.
That was harsh.
Well, Colin Molloy, we're delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
Hell no, we won't do whatever it is you want us to do.
So your band, the Decembrists, is named after a short-lived rebellion in the Russian army in the 1820s against the chosen successor to the Tsar. Did you know that? Anyway, we were thinking, fine, that's an obscure protest, but what do you know about other obscure protests? Answer two out of these three questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, and maybe have a name for your next band. Carl, who is Colin Molloy playing for?
Colin is playing for Ingolf Noto of Portland, Oregon.
All right.
Ingolf.
Here we go. Ready to play for Ingolf? Here we go. First question. In Britain in 2008, a protester named Dan Glass fought the expansion of Heathrow Airport by doing what? Was it A, gluing himself to Prime Minister Gordon Brown? B, changing his name to Heathrow is quite big enough already, don't you think, Glass? Or C, going on a Cadbury chocolates only fast until the expansion was defeated?
I'm going to go with the changing the name.
Changing the name to Heathrow is quite big enough already, don't you think, Glass?
Yeah.
Actually, he glued himself to Prime Minister Brown. He was invited to accept an award from the Prime Minister for his activism, in fact, and as he shook his hand, he had put a big glob of super glue on it, and his hope was that he would super glue himself to the Prime Minister, and it didn't work. The Prime Minister was just too slippery. All right, still two more chances. Next question, when a British theme park opened an evil clown-themed ride called Carnival of Screams last year, the theme park was protested by whom? A, a group of children who were not taller than this sign, and so couldn't ride. B, actual clowns who marched because they wanted to show that not all clowns are evil, even though they are. C, a group of people who went on the ride claimed they did not scream once and deserved a refund.
I'm going to go for the middle one again.
The clowns?
I think that, the clowns kind of get a bad rap, and they would probably not be into that.
You're right. It was the clowns. Very good. Lastly, this is exciting because if you get this one, you win. Here we go. This is a celebrity protest. In order to help save the rainforest, movie star Harrison Ford once did what? A, chased away loggers with a giant boulder. B, financed and starred in a documentary about deforestation. Or C, had his chest waxed.
I'm gonna go for B again.
That would be so sensible.
Right? C? Really?
Right. We're all making C signs at you.
All right, I'm going to trust the Portland audience here. Go with C.
You're right, having his chest waxed?
Yeah.
You're right. That's what he did. Harrison Ford did, in fact, a video for the group Conservation International that shows him getting his hairy chest waxed while he says, quote, every bit of rainforest that gets ripped out over there really hurts us over here. Carl, how did Colin Malloy do in our quiz?
Colin did very well, Peter. Two correct answers, so he wins for In Golf Noto.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Colin Malloy is a member of the Decembrists, my favorite band, and the author of the new book, Wildwood. Colin Malloy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Just a minute, Carl tries to explain away his behavior at last year's Wait Wait Christmas party in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the driving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And Angie's List, with reviews on local contractors and doctors in 500 categories, with ratings based only on member feedback. Angie'sList.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Neil Conan. In the coming week, we'll tell you why your darling tween turned into a sullen, risk-loving teen as we explore the teenage brain with National Geographic. Plus, the political junkie returns on Wednesday with a new trivia question. And Maria Bello joins us as she steps into some big shoes on the remake of Prime Suspect. That's all in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers.
You know, people develop strong attachments to their cars.
Yeah, and it's very hard to tell them. It's time to move on.
Something my brother's heard from every one of his wives.
Anyway, we have a way to ease the pain a bit. Now you can donate your car, and the net proceeds from its sale will benefit this station.
Interested? We thought so.
Here's what to do.
For information on supporting Nashville Public Radio with your vehicle donation, visit our website, WPLN.org.
Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from Zeitlin & Company Realtors, Missy Rodriguez-Brower, Donnie Creighton, Nan Speller, and Shay Howard of Zeitlin & Company Realtors, committed to real estate services. And by WPLN listener members, support the programming you value on Nashville Public Radio with a pledge today. You'll be entered in a drawing for a 9-day tour of England, Scotland, and Wales for two. Pledge now at WPLN.org. The drawing will be held Friday, September 23rd.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle. We're playing this week with Roxanne Roberts, Roy Blunt Jr., and Peter Gross. And here again is your host at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland, Oregon, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks so much. In just a minute, Carl uncorks a bottle of delicious Oregon Rimo Noir in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Yeah, I feel the same way about that one. If you'd like a sip, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, it's time for a new game that we're calling...
Name That Horrifying Injury.
This week, the Wall Street Journal revealed a list of hundreds and hundreds of codes used by hospitals to indicate specific injuries for insurance purposes. And man, are these codes specific. So we're going to ask you three questions about that list. Here we go. First up, Peter, according to this list, there are no fewer than 9 different ways you can be injured by what? A, medieval jousting lances. B, turtles. Or C, fellow audience members at a GOP presidential debate.
B was just turtles. Nothing specific about them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Turtles.
Yes, it's turtles. Very good. There are 9 different ways you can be injured by a turtle, as indicated on this list. There's a different code for each, among them struck by turtle, bitten by turtle. Also very dangerous, macaws, cows, and the sinister chicken. There are 3 codes for the 3 different ways you can be bitten by a dolphin.
Huh.
One of them, I assume, is lovingly. I don't know. Roxanne, you're up next. According to insurance codes, which of these urban menaces can cause at least 3 different kinds of injuries? Each one has its own code. A, people who refuse to look up from their Blackberries. B, falling pianos. Or C, lampposts.
Okay, I'm going to eliminate pianos on the theory that there's only one real way to get injured.
You could be under it. You could be riding on it as it descends. And you could be attempting to play it, and no.
The only thing you can do is really smash your car or smash your set, walk into a lamppost. So I'm going to say BlackBerry.
No, actually, it was lamppost.
Ah!
You do not have the imagination of an insurance adjuster because you could walk into lamppost initial encounter. That's one code. And there's another code for walk into lamppost subsequent encounter. So it's like you walk into one lamppost, ow, you bounce off, and you hit the other. All right, Roy, this one's for you. Okay. 2 of the following are a name of real bands, musical bands, and 1 is an injury that insurance companies need a code for. Pick the injury. Is it A, the unspecified balloon accident, B, the string cheese incident, or C, Nickelback?
Unspecified balloon.
That's it. The unspecified balloon accident.
There is a band called String Cheese.
That was the point, Roy. We know. There is also a band called Nickelback, but we don't want to talk about them anymore.
They're a Portland band, right?
I don't think so. No.
I am greatly joking.
Okay, on to some more questions for you guys from the week's news. Roxanne, IKEA knows that shopping for furniture can be stressful for couples, and they're trying to help. What are they now offering at some of their stores?
Well, they already have a place where you can park the children.
Yes, that's great. But what they really need, and some now offer, is a place where you can park who?
Your mother-in-law.
No.
Where you can park... husbands?
Yeah, and basically a place to park your husbands, boyfriends. It's a play area for men. IKEA, as you know, if you go there, has a child play area called Small Land. And now women at certain IKEA stores can ditch their annoying husbands or boyfriends as well in Manland. You assume there's a little circle over the A, Manland. There's foosball, comfy chairs, video games, free hot dogs, everything a man could want, short of not being forced to go shopping in the first place. And this is great. They give the women who drop off the husbands and boyfriends a buzzer to remind them to collect their men before they leave the store. So now IKEA has to deal with both a pile of abandoned buzzers and a pile of abandoned husbands. Roy, libraries across the country are having to cut services due to budget cutbacks, but one library in British Columbia is doing the opposite. Soon people there will be able to check out what?
Check out the librarians.
You're actually close. Oh. You're so close. I'm going to give it to you. They're going to be able to check out people.
Oh.
So let's say you need to find out what it's like to have red hair or be acrobatic or be a druid, say. So you just go to the Surrey Town Library and request a red-haired acrobatic druid, an actual person who will go out with you and talk to you about his or her weird, twisted life.
Wow.
So, like, you know, if all the Harry Potter books are checked out, why not check out Harry Potter?
Mm-hmm. Harry Potter.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a little hirsute, but he's good with the clown.
Yeah.
People with a wide variety of backgrounds and experiences have already signed up to be living books. Huh. So library says they'll be a lot like regular books. For instance, please do not put them face down on the floor. It hurts their spines. And if you have to stop in the middle, don't bend their ears back to hold your place.
What if your area of expertise was, like, really dull?
Yeah.
You'd just be sitting around the library watching people go by, sitting there on the shelf, getting dusty.
I know a lot about computer programming. No.
Statistics. No, really. No.
Well, the yellow-breasted warbler is... No.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, which is waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast from the producers of Wait Wait. This week, how to create your own TV show. That's at howtodoeverything.org. Hi, you're at Wait Wait, don't tell me.
Hi, Peter. This is Dave Coletta from Hyde Park, Chicago.
Hey, how are things back in Chicago?
They're pretty good.
They're pretty good? Do you miss us at all?
I do.
Thank you.
Come back soon, please.
Does it feel a little empty and hollow when we're not in town?
It does, very much so.
Thank you. Well, welcome to the show, Dave. You're, of course, going to play the Limerick Challenge. You're going to listen as Carl reads for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly and to the limericks, you will be a winner. Ready to play?
Yes.
Here is your first limerick.
I once was a bit of a cad, but now I'm a housebroken lad. Testosterone slid since the birth of our kid. I'm less manly 'cause I am a...
I think I might need a hint on this one.
Well, let's hear it again. Let's hear it again.
Okay.
I once was a bit of a cad, but now I'm a housebroken lad. Testosterone slid since the birth of our kid. I'm less manly because I am a...
Dad!
Yeah, dad! Whoa. Very good. Caring for children causes a steep drop in a man's testosterone levels, according to a new study. This keeps new dads at home instead of out chasing women. So babies get the care they need and frazzled moms get something to yell at. Basically, having kids makes you less manly. Can you imagine if it made you even manlier? When your wife is nursing, you stand there shouting, "Take it all off!" We're trying to stuff dollar bills in her maternity pants. It wouldn't be good.
I believe they're called yoga pants.
Yeah. All right, here's your next limerick.
My colleagues all think I'm a jerk, 'cause alcohol drives me berserk. When I'm at the bar, I don't go too far. But I'm crazy at parties at...
Work.
Right. Do not blame yourself for making a complete fool of yourself at the office party. Now you can blame science. According to researchers in England, of course. Drinking in settings not normally associated with drinking, such as your workplace, confuses your brain and makes you less able to control your behavior. Also, of course, if you're in a bar and a photocopy of your butt seems like something you really have to have, in a bar you have to go out to Kinko's.
This is why I've always wondered why it was so hard for me to get a drink in a Kinko's.
We're going to have to ask you to leave.
Yeah. Sir, we told you after last time. Here, sir, is your last limerick.
I think water fights promise some pert fun. Folks get wet, yes, but show me the hurt one. But here in Iran, they're enforcing a ban, and Tehran is forbidding my...
squirt gun.
Yes, indeed. Iran, the authoritarian government of Iran, has already banned Gmail, pet cats, and mullets.
Oh.
And now they are cracking down on water gun fights. One particularly big fight in Tehran, dozens of pretend fighters were thrown in a non-pretend jail. We hope they can rise up against this, but it may be hard to inspire a freedom movement by saying, let us struggle so our children may someday grow their hair long and back and shoot their pet cats with super soakers.
I can't believe we allowed Iran to get squirt gun technology.
I know.
The Israelis really should have taken care of this for us.
They promised to use it only for peaceful uses.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Dave do in our quiz?
Oh, Dave had 3 correct answers, Peter. So, Dave, I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Well done, Dave. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie, Peter. Peter Gross, Roxanne Roberts, and Roy Blunt Jr., they all have 3 points each.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Oh, okay. Well, we have randomly selected an order for you to go. So, Peter, here we go. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Thousands of people visited the National September 11th Memorial that opened at the site of the blank.
Former World Trade Center.
Yes. In the election on Tuesday, Democrats lost the House seat held by tweeting Congressman blank.
Anthony Weiner.
Right. Investigations have been launched over a Department of Energy loan given to Solyndra, a now bankrupt company that made blank.
A solar energy?
Yeah, solar panels. Best known for his Oscar-winning performance in the movie Charlie, actor blank died at age 88.
Cliff Roberts.
Yes. The comic strip Doonesbury featured excerpts this week of Joe McGinnis's unauthorized biography of blank.
Sarah Palin.
Right. A packed commuter train in India went 600 miles before the passengers or engineers realized blank.
They were actually in Indiana. I guess after 600 miles, you'd be out of it.
Yeah.
600 miles before they realized they were going the wrong way.
Exactly right. They went 600 miles in the wrong way, and that is the distance, if you will, from Washington to Chicago. They went on there, wait a minute.
We should have been in the middle of the Atlantic.
Well, you know how you tend to... you know how you tend to zone out when you're on the train? Apparently people in India... do that too. Apparently none of the 1,000 passengers on the commuter train noticed that they had gone half a continent the wrong way. Carl, how did Peter do in our quiz?
Peter had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points and Peter has the lead.
Well done. All right, Roxanne, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said that the United States remains hopeful that 2 hikers will be freed from prison in blank.
Iran.
Right. The Taliban launched an attack on the U.S. Embassy and NATO headquarters in blank on Tuesday.
In Kabul.
Yeah, Kabul. In an attempt to save $5 billion a year, Bank of America announced it was cutting 30,000 blank.
Jobs.
Right. A British parliamentary committee announced that it would be recalling blank to testify a second time about the phone hacking scandal.
James Murdoch.
Right. A Swedish man who heard a strange noise coming from his neighbor's backyard discovered blank.
An elk in a tree. Drunken elk in a tree.
Yes. Friend of yours, right? The debut of their partnership with designer Missoni caused the website for discount store blank to crash multiple times.
Target.
Right. The Swiss bank UBS blamed a rogue trader for blanking.
For losing $2 billion.
Right. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg says a video of New York City cops bumping and grinding with parade goers just proves blank.
That they're fun-loving. He didn't think there was wrong with it.
Yes. Well, he basically what he said was that means that cops are very friendly.
Yes.
Give it to him. Officers patrolling the West Indian Day Parade were simply fulfilling their pledge to protect and serve these scantily clad booties of the revelers by shielding them with their police crotches. So if that is Mayor Bloomberg's definition of being friendly, we advise you to be careful about being friends with Mayor Bloomberg. Carl, how did Rocks do in our quiz?
8 correct answers, 16 points. Oh. Janot has 19 points and the lead.
Well done, Roxanne. So how many then does Roy need to win?
Well, he needs at least 8 to tie, 9 to win outright.
All right, Roy, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. According to a report this week, for the first time in 27 years, 1 in 6 Americans is living in blank.
Poverty.
Right. For his actions during a firefight in Afghanistan, Marine Dakota Meyer received the blank from President Obama on Thursday.
The Congressional Medal of Honor.
Yes, because her plane at Dulles Airport was being evacuated, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was forced to blank.
Slide down the chute.
Yes, she did. Two women in Tennessee were arrested for stealing artwork from blank.
Oh, I know this. From a... It wasn't from the museum. It was from Arby's.
Yes, their local Arby's. A study released in the Journal of Pediatrics this week says that cartoons like blank are bad for kids. SpongeBob's reference, yes. Saying it could revolutionize the newspaper industry, one manufacturer has come up with blank.
Revolutionary liquid paper.
Almost. Lickable ink.
Oh.
The new Taste-It notes could make the pages of newspapers taste like food. This could save the industry because while we hate newspapers, we love food. Better still, articles could taste like whatever they're about, meaning from now on people will pay even less attention to Joe Lieberman.
Oof.
Carl, did Roy do well enough to win?
He needed at least 8 correct answers, Peter. Roy had just 5 correct answers. So with 19 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
There she goes. Well done, Roxanne. Now, as we told you, this week, Swiss Bank UBS reported a rogue trader lost $2 billion. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict where investigators will find that lost money. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Reputation.com. With tools to monitor and protect the online reputations of doctors, lawyers, and business professionals. Learn more at Reputation.com. Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at LumberLiquidators.com. And the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at HouseLogic.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions' Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern making a cameo this week is Amy Solomon. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Special thanks this week to Heather Wilton and the crew at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, known lovingly as The Schnitz. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer every week of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, where will UBS find the missing $2 billion? Mr. Peter Gross.
No one is really sure, but this rogue trader's fiance has been seen sporting a 400-carat engagement ring.
Roxanne Roberts.
Turns out he spent $10 on a bag of pot and the rest on munchies at 7-Eleven.
Roy Blunt, Jr.
Well, it's going to be a place so obvious that it's the last place you look, but it's not going to be in just one place in one lump. So I would suggest investigators to go to this man's house, and I bet they will find thousands of Swiss toasters or fondue pots or whatever you get as premium when you invest and put money into other Swiss banks.
Well, if the money turns up in any of those places, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Me. Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks to John Bell and the staff at Oregon Public Broadcasting. Thanks to Peter Gross, Roxanne Roberts, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to our fabulous audience here in Portland. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, 91.7 WHRS Cookeville.
You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
International businessman and philanthropist Noah Liff was devoted to family and community. In developing Steiner Liff recycling companies, he saved countless substances from landfills by converting them into reusable products. A lover of opera, Noah had a vision of an elegant multi-purpose facility to inspire the artistic, business, and social communities. Nashville Opera's award-winning Noah Liff Opera Center has become a catalyst for reinvestment in Sylvan Park. The Raise Your Glasses initiative is designed to continue Noah's legacy. More at nashvilleopera.org.
Nashville weather for this afternoon, a 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny in the high in the lower 80s, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight, mostly cloudy, the low in the mid 60s. Tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms with a high in the upper 70s, right